Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on cracksidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again. And, you know, Phil, when we planned on recording this podcast, the original plan was talk about how great Maui was, maybe say some positive things going forward, and look ahead to some big games coming up. But, boy, we have a whole new rundown now.
Yeah, we need to insert a Ron Burgundy gif of, boy, that escalated quickly.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Maui Invitational is now, like, third on our rundown of things to chat about in this podcast. We're going to talk about the two most recent things going on, and that would be almost a catastrophe season-ending loss to Eastern Illinois.
The basketball program ending.
Yeah, and Hanif Cheatham leaving the program, which certainly took a lot of us by surprise. We're going to talk about what that means for the program going forward. But first, Phil, let's talk about Tuesday night, or Monday night, I should say, and as we were all on edge watching Marquette almost blow a game to Eastern Illinois, I was chronicling it on Twitter, going through the stages of a catastrophic loss, and I'm glad I never got to share my idea for stage six, which is acceptance of the loss.
Oh, but yeah, that would have been terrible.
Next time we go through that, though, I'm going to do it all in GIF form, or GIF form, however you like to say it. But
it's
Phil, from your perspective, at the Bradley Center, what was it like sitting through that game and seeing how the team played against Eastern Illinois?
Well, in the first half, you kind of had this whole, well, first of all, the crowd, terrible. There was no energy. There was maybe 2,000 people in their seats at tip-off. There was just a whole bunch of stuff, where it just, the whole night felt off. The national anthem was less than stellar, you know, et cetera. Kind of the first half, you're going, all right, they're coming off of Maui. Hanif's left the program. A lot of turmoil. You had Thanksgiving. The team went away. They're just, you know, there's not much energy. That's just kind
of. We had a big old bag of excuses, didn't we?
Right, yeah. We had everything under the sun. They'll be fine. Wojo's going to hammer on some whiteboards. The second half will be fine. And then the second half started. And is it Duma? Is that how you pronounce their.
Yeah.
Their center's name, who was, thank God, out with foul trouble in the first half, because holy crap, he just owned the team in the second half, and you just kept this growing sense of dread of, oh, this is happening. Oh my, this is actually happening.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught my six stages of a catastrophic loss, but you know, basically it started with, it's a slow start, no big deal, and you know, stage four was like, wow, it's getting late, and stage five was, holy crap, this could actually happen, and we were full blown stage five there with a couple minutes to go. All the concerns that you may have had about the team and its defense, boy, they were all there on Monday night against Eastern Illinois. And you know, there's that old cliche, live by the three, die by the three, and maybe it doesn't exactly fit for this team, but what we did see was when that team is not shooting well, they can lose to absolutely anyone.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the defense is going to give up a lot of points. You know, like again, that live by the three cliche kind of suggests you shouldn't shoot as many threes. That's not the case with this team. Marquette should always be shooting threes because that's the way they're going to, because that's their strength. When you've got shooters like Rousey and Howard and Hauser, they should always be shooting threes. Anytime those guys get an open look, they should take it. But what I'm saying is when those shots aren't falling, it could be a rough night, and it almost was a rough night. And, you know, I kind of joked that that would have been a season-ending loss, but not really, because it's hard to bring back a loss like that on the resume.
Yeah.
Know, without, you know, without, like, having an insane number of wins in Big East play. So, there were, I got a little nervous there late in the second half. Like, holy crap, we could be done with the season before December, which would be really early.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't want to dismiss Eastern Illinois as like a terrible, terrible team, but yeah, that would have been, I mean, basically talk about giving away literally everything you earned in Maui and then some. Like, it would have been a real tough loss to overcome, and especially if you lose to Eastern Illinois at home. I mean, the odds don't look great with the schedule coming up in terms of Georgia, Vermont, and Wisconsin, right? I mean, like, if you're not going to win Eastern Illinois, are you going to win any of those three?
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't have much confidence in it, and I'm not sure I still do.
Right.
But, you know, like there are some excuses you could tell yourself, if you, like you kind of alluded to them earlier, Phil, if you want to say it was a fluke, and maybe it was. I mean, Marquette has had some bad losses in non-conference play before and done fine. I believe Marquette lost to Green Bay in the season they went to the Elite Eight. They've had some bad losses, and, you know, like I said, and even Wojo did say in his experience when a team goes to Maui, that first game back is a little sluggish, so there's that. And as you say, you know, the maybe team taken off guard by one of their leaders, Hanif Cheatham, saying he's leaving the program that afternoon, maybe that threw off their psyche a little bit too. But that doesn't really change the overwhelming concern that the team's bad defensive metrics are no fluke at this point in the season. As we are recording this on Tuesday night, Marquette's two-point percentage defense is ranks 343rd in the country.
And that's out of 4,000 teams, right?
No, that would be out of 351 teams.
Ooh, that's not good.
That is quite bad. So, yeah, only 8 teams are worse at two-point percentage defense. So, in other words, teams see these metrics and they watch the tape and they know that they can drive the lane against Marquette with complete confidence.
Yeah, little known University of Turnstile is immediately ahead of them in the rankings.
Marquette does not have a rim protector, so they're getting easy layups. The guards are having trouble keeping guys in front of them, so guys are blown by our guards and getting good looks, and like I said, getting to the rim. And it's just been way too easy. Now, there was a hashtag going very lightly today on Twitter, but there was an effort of say something nice about the Marquette defense. The overall adjusted defensive efficiency for Marquette is 137th, which is better than last year at this point anyway. Last year, Marquette ranked 165th. And that was at the end of the season. So, hey, there's improvement. 30 spots better in adjusted defensive efficiency. So there's that. And I will say, you know, Phil, I don't think it's a question of effort on the team's part. I think the guys are doing the best they can out there and trying to be active. I think it's just some of these guys are a little small and a little slow. Like I said, the guards are a little small. And, you know, guys like, you know, Helt and Hauser, and I guess maybe John, you know, they're just maybe a step slow, and they just can't get to the basket and block shots and alter shots. It's not so much about getting blocks. It's about altering shots, making a guy take a tough shot, you know, getting in his face and making him settle for a step-back jumper instead of blowing by you and getting a good look at the rim.
I watched it last night, especially in the start of the second half, and I really think there is individually, with the exception of Rousey, I think individually the players can play defense. But there is something, there's just something schematically that's off because the team is having to rotate way too much. It's like a scramble drill on every possession, which forces everyone to communicate, right? Which they're just not quick enough or adept enough to be able to handle that kind of scramble. If they were a longer team, and I think Greg Elliott is an example of where that can you know, you can overcome with length. If the team were longer, you could overcome some of that scrambling nature because you've got a longer reach. But when you've got folks like Rousey and Howard, and even maybe to a certain extent Sakar, when he's playing the three, just they don't have the length to overcome kind of the scrambling nature.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you're not a very big guy, you know, being a step slow just hurts that much more, right? Because if you're a little late on a rotation and if, like, you're trying to get back out to your guy on a wide open jumper, you get that hand up, the hand's not really going anywhere.
Right.
Because it's definitely not blocking the shot, and it's not probably even getting high enough to get in his face and alter it. So, like, you know, I hate to harp on the guys because they're short, but I mean that is a problem in basketball sometimes, especially if you're not particularly quick. So maybe if some of these guys were like really lightning fast, maybe you can get away with being, you know, a little shorter. Like say Dominic James, like, you know, he was a small guy, but he was quick.
Right.
He could make up a lot of ground. Plus Dominic had one of the craziest verticals I think I've seen for a guy that small.
Right.
But you know, my point is when you have some, biological, some physical disadvantages, you're schematically, you have to be almost perfect to make up for those. And Marquette is definitely so far from that.
Well, and so there's some weird stuff going on. I noticed, and Helt's the one that does this the most. You don't see John doing it quite as much. But there was several times where Helt was hedging, I guess I would say, 45 feet from the basket. And the way the offense attacked it was to run away from Helt. They just dribbled away from Helt, and he couldn't get back, and it was an easy, like, why are we extending so far? I honestly think there's some sort of psychological thing where we are so good at three-point shots that we're terrified of giving up three-point shots, and we are so focused on guarding the perimeter that we've basically just gone ole on the paint. Like, we're basically saying, just, yeah, sure, get into the paint. That seems to be the strategy right now.
Yes, get into the paint where you're shooting almost 60% instead of staying out there where you're shooting 31% against Marquette. I will say that Marquette's 3-point percentage defense is not terrible. It's not bad, but it's not good. But it's as we're recording this, it is ranked 101st in the country. So again, not great, but I would not call that awful. And when you're in the upper third, but yeah, the problem is teams are getting in the paint because they can do it with confidence and say, look, statistically it shows, guys, when we play Marquette, you got a 60% chance of getting 2 points. So let's drive the lane every time. Let's get in the paint, and 60% of the time we're going to get 2 points. It's a pretty sound strategy until Marquette shows that you're not going to get 2 points 60% of the time when you're playing against Marquette.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly, I don't know exactly how you fix everything, because, like I said, you can only scheme so much, but something has to change, because otherwise, like I said, when the three-point shooting isn't there, this team could lose to literally any team in the country. And it almost did on Monday night. Hopefully there won't be many more shooting nights where, Rousey and Howard, I think they both might have finished close to single digits by the end of the night.
Yeah, Rousey was 1 of 5, and Howard was 4 of 12, I believe.
Okay, so yeah, when the shooting's not there, that defense is going to cause you a lot of problems. And, Jay Billis was pretty complimentary of Harry Froehlich, saying he's going to help. I hope he's right about that. I'll kind of be a little pessimistic and say, well, let's wait and see. And, I'm not going to say he's a good defender just because he's tall. I hope maybe he can offer a little more down there. I don't know if it would be playing with Helt or in place of Helt. Yeah, something has got to change, 5 feet from the basket, because guys are getting in there way too often and getting too many layups, and it's just too many uncontested shots that are just looking way too easy, and it's just hard to overcome that. Even if you are a great three-point shooting team, if you come down and shoot 36% from the floor from three, well, that's fine, but if the other team's going down and getting 2 points 60% of the time, well, you're probably going to lose the game.
Right. Well, and I do think Froehlich will help. You're right. The degree to which he will help is in question. I think you'll probably see some lineups where you push Hauser down to the three, maybe somebody like John playing the four. I don't think Helt can play the four, but Theo John could play the four with Froehlich playing the five. Maybe we get a little better interior defense. We get a little longer on the perimeter with Hauser out there. Like I said, I think Hauser, one-on-one as a defender is average to above average. I think Theo John one-on-one when he's not having to defend a five is probably at least average. But it's, we've got some folks, I don't think Theo John is a legit five. I think he's having to play there because we don't have a legit five right now until Froehlich comes back. So, maybe things get better, but now with Hanif Cheatham, off the team, now the guard positions from a depth and from a defensive length standpoint gets different. But so we'll see. But I will say the one positive I'll take away, maybe this goes to the hashtag I missed out on saying something nice about Marquette's defense. Greg Elliott, is a good player now, and I think will be a very good player by the end of the season. I think he will help defensively, both from a length and from an activity standpoint. And I think his offense will also come with it. I mean, he missed a couple of free throws late in the game, but that's a freshman for you. But I think he's going to come along even better than I thought he would when we did our preseason pod. So it just goes to show you I don't know anything.
He did miss a couple of free throws, but he also hit a big-time layup late.
Yes, that he could have very easily dropped off his knee and gone out of bounds, right? He had it essentially knocked out of his hand, somehow recovered it in midair and still laid it up for a good basket to take a three-point lead.
Yeah, Phil, like you, you know, I definitely had low expectations for Elliott just because, you know, I just thought he'd be buried on the depth chart a little bit. But, you know, when he first signed with Marquette, the big positive that I took when he signed was that he had an offer from Tom Izzo in Michigan State. And so if, you know, recruiting rankings be damned, if Tom Izzo in Michigan State thinks you're good enough, there's got to be something there. And so I think he's kind of showing what maybe Izzo saw when he threw that offer at him, that he has length and activity on it, and then you can maybe bring the offensive game along a little bit. And I think you're right. You know, I mentioned earlier the overall defensive efficiency is not awful for Marquette right now, and I think a reason for that is they do get some deflections and some steals and a block here and there, and that's, you know, a way to, you know, limit a team's points per possession, and that kind of applies into the, you know, defensive efficiency. So that's why, despite the ungodly two-point percentage teams are shooting against Marquette, the overall defensive efficiency numbers are acceptable, maybe the word I'm looking for right now.
Oh, right.
I don't think you want to go into the tournament with that number, 137.
Well, I don't know that you're going to get into the tournament with
that.
Yeah,
exactly. But, again, when last year's team was at 165, you're like, hey, it's a step forward.
Yeah.
Trust
the progress. That's true. I will say the last thing I'll say on the defense, and I don't know how you fix it because and it feels weird that we're this early in the season. We may be already at the point, depending on what Froehling brings, to go to the F it, let's just outscore them mode that happened after the Georgetown game last year that got them into the tournament when they got a little bit hot. But Rousey, I think Rousey is part of the issue, and obviously, like last night, he wasn't helping offensively that much. Uncharacteristically, missed a couple of free throws as well. So, and Wowsy was just way off. But he's just every time the offense seems to focus, the opponent's offense seems to focus on Rousey's whoever Rousey is defending. That is the person that's going to initiate and who's going to generate some offense, so whether it's a pick and roll or it's some sort of shoulder screen or something like that. It seems to be pick on Andrew Rousey when he's in the game. And I don't know how you fix that.
Exactly. Like mouse in the house, you know, you see it on the floor and so like, that's where we're going. And you know, I feel bad picking on him, but that's what teams are doing. They say, look, we're going to start with this guy. He's not very big. He's not overly quick. I think we could probably get by him, and more often than not, they do. And like, I mean, you want him on the floor for his offensive game because you're not going to win without it. I wish I knew how to protect him a little bit defensively. I guess is there a zone you could come up with to protect him? But I think that's a good point. I think teams see him on the floor, say, and especially because most every team in the country, where does their offense start with?
Point guard.
Point guard. Yeah. And so what does Rousey play?
Point guard.
So normally they're matched up with each other, so of course that's where the offense starts. So I don't know. Phil, I kind of get the sense that as we go along this season, the general tone of every podcast is after wins, we're going to praise the offense, and after bad games or losses, we're just going to come on here and rip the defense, and then just kind of rinse and repeat for the next 3 months.
So should this just become an evergreen podcast and we'll
just like leave this. Yeah, maybe we'll just like record a podcast after this, and where we'll just have names that we insert. Phil, that was a great game against insert name, and then you just input the name, and then we can have an evergreen podcast. So in case we have situations where, you know, we don't have time to record a full one, we'll just do that. So we'll have a defense was bad, that's why we lost podcast, and offense was good, that's why we won podcast.
And I like it. Be our genius.
Thing. So that's what we'll probably do going forward. But there are other topics to talk about, Phil, and we'd be remiss if we did not address the I guess we'll call it a bit of a stunner we got on Monday when we learned Hanif Cheetham was leaving the program. I'm sure as you all know by now, because if you're listening to this podcast, you know enough about Marquette basketball to know that Hanif Cheetham announced he was leaving the program. Certainly a surprise, Phil, when you talk about one of the leaders on the team. You know, a guy leaving in the middle of his junior year, which, you know, according to NCAA rules, unless he gets some kind of waiver, that means when he arrives at a new school next year, he would only get half a season of his senior year unless he decides to sit out a year and a half at his next destination. Now, the only reason we got about why he was leaving, he said it was a family, it was personal reasons. Wojo touched on it briefly in the post-game press conference on Monday. He said it's a family issue. That's all I'm at liberty to say. I expect him to transfer somewhere closer to his home in Orlando. So I'll just take that at its word, and that's what happened. If there is some kind of personal or family issue, I wish Hanif and his family the best with whatever is going on with it, whether it's him personally or a family member that's dealing with something. I hate that would happen, and that's why it would end his Marquette career. But first and foremost, I wish him the best, and I hope whatever is wrong in his life gets righted and he can get back on track. But from a basketball perspective, Phil, I really hate to lose Hanif. He's been a nice player, and he's a guy who, when he came in as a freshman, people thought, my gosh, could this guy become our all-time leading scorer? He's going to play so much. But it certainly caught me by surprise, and I think everyone, when we learned Hanif was leaving the program.
Yeah, I think we forget these guys are A, kids, and B, human, right? And have all right. all the same baggage, if not more, that we have. And this is not unprecedented territory, right? Deonte Burton transferred to Illinois or Iowa State to in some measure to get away with from some of the issues.
Yeah, that was
revolving around
his
mother.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly what's going on with Hanif, but that was could be a similar situation because, like you said, Deonte essentially couldn't be in Milwaukee anymore because he was just heartbroken after losing his mom. But,
right.
But that was a similar situation.
You know, and so like you said, you hope whatever's wrong can get righted and you wish him the best because he's been nothing but a great advocate or ambassador for the program. And while there may or may not have been some, he may have not met everyone's expectations, he was still a good player and was in my opinion trending in the right direction. Now, I've always had a man crush, if you will, on him. I just love what his game potential is. So I'm especially disheartened to have him leave. But unless we hear absolutely anything otherwise, we have to assume that this is entirely family-driven. This is not a reflection on the program. I can't possibly imagine this is a case where he's transferring somewhere at a better program to get more minutes, right? I mean, he was probably getting all the minutes. You could maybe even argue more minutes than he probably was delivering on. So I think we have to take it at face value that this is a personal decision.
If it's strictly a basketball thing, it makes no sense.
Right,
he only
exactly.
gets a half a semester at his next spot.
Right, at least if nothing else, play out this semester. Like, there's more advantage being a mid-year transfer, because at this point, he's not even a mid-year transfer, right? I mean, because he has to finish the semester.
Yeah, I don't know. He might still be on campus just to finish up his academic work or whatever, I don't know. But I think if you're a junior and you want to go, to me, it makes more sense to finish out that again, if it's strictly basketball reasons, it would make sense to finish out that last season that you're not happy with, and then take a full year off and then get a full year at your next stop, as opposed to transferring mid-year when you would sit out the spring at your and then the fall at your new stop, and then you'd only get the spring at your new school, and that would be it, unless you take a full year and a half off. And then, which, who knows, maybe if he's dealing with a family situation, maybe that's what he's going to do. Maybe he may take a year and a half away from basketball and then play in, what would that be, 1920?
Yeah, 1920,
when,
yeah.
Yeah, when, when, when he would play against
which he may be doing. I mean, it may make sense if he's moving closer to home to deal with the situation. Maybe that's exactly what he wants to do, is take that year and a half off, resolve the issue, and then get back to basketball, right? Be around a program that he can practice with or whatever, but kind of have that weight off to handle whatever situation. Again, his choice, makes whatever decision. I do think there was a little bit, you know, not to lend too much credence to social media, but there was a little bit of, well, look at all the recruits that haven't worked out for Wojo, and here's another Wojo exit and all this transfer churn and stuff. You know, you got to kind of, you know, we mentioned Burton, you know, and now Hanif. Those are different kinds of transfer. These aren't program related transfers, right? Those are people transfers.
To me, like, people say, oh, well, there's been a ton of guys who transferred under Wojo. But, you know, speaking from a strictly basketball perspective, I mean, how many do you really miss? How many
went on to be amazing somewhere else, right?
Right, yeah. It's like, you know, there have been, you know, Deontay Burton was great at Iowa State, but again, there was reasons why he wasn't coming back to Marquette. But there are some guys that you just kind of forgot about who, I don't know, like, I guess the – yeah, we haven't seen Tracy Carter at LaSalle yet. He may have a good career there, but a lot of the guys transferred because there were better players in the program who were taking their minutes. With Hanif's situation, like I said, from a basketball perspective, I hate that he's leaving, but there may be some guys on the team now who were in position to take some more of his minutes, like Elliott and Kane. And we'll see what happens going forward. But like I said, like you said, Phil, I don't think there have been too many transfers who left because they don't believe in Wojo or his direction for the program. Like Hanif, and basically all I really know is what I've seen on social media. And Hanif had nothing but good things to say about Marquette and the program, and it sounds like he hates that he's leaving, but he's looking forward to moving on. So I think certainly Hanif and Marquette seem like they're leaving on good terms. He just has to leave. But speaking basketball wise, Phil, how do you think Marquette makes up for the loss of Hanif? We saw a little bit against Eastern Illinois. Again, it meant more minutes for Greg Elliott, which I think certainly defensively could be a very good thing. I think Cheatham was a good defensive player, though, but I think Elliott certainly has potential to be a very good defensive player, and could be more minutes for Kane, who I think still needs some development. What do you think this means for the team for the immediate future?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's a short-term, long-term horizon here. I think short-term, no matter what Kane and Elliott's potential is, you know, this can't help but – or this can't do anything but hurt the prospects for the 2017-2018 season, right? I mean, you lose a guard body, you lose depth on the roster, you lose experience, you lose a guy who maybe wasn't as offensively focused last year or even a little bit this year as we would have hoped, but still someone who's a contributor, certainly on the defensive end, definitely can be on the offensive end. And now you're replacing it with less experience. It's higher potential, perhaps, but certainly less experienced. And that was reflected in part. You kind of saw both sides of that with Elliott, where you had some really great plays. He had four blocks. I don't think you're going to really get that. You weren't getting that out of Cheatham. You had that heroic layup we talked about, so to speak. But you also had lapses, the missed free throws thing. You know, now Hanif would miss some clutch free throws from time to time last year, but seemed to have put that behind him. So I think short term it really will negatively impact the 17-18 season. Certainly in the non-conference, there's going to be a lot of change here in the next couple of games, and not a lot of room to make those changes in a protected environment, right?
Yeah, I think. Basically, my kind of take is, like, it may be good for the development of some of the young players, but I just don't see a way that Marquette is better this year without Hanif. I mean, Marquette took maybe a small step back, but I do think Marquette may have taken a step back by losing Hanif, because I think they lost a good player and a guy who's one of the leaders on the team.
Well, and even
Marquette
with
only got a couple. Only have a couple of upperclassmen.
Yeah, well, and depth is a definite issue. I mean, I don't know if they showed it on TV, but in the early in the Eastern Illinois game, Howard rotated over to kind of be the secondary defender and took a charge, which was great, except he banged knees and he had trouble walking, you know, immediately following that. And for a couple of minutes after he came back into the game, was kind of wincing and stuff, right? So now, with, you know, if Howard had gone down, now until Froehlich shows up, you're down to seven players, you know, legitimate, you know, non-walk-on players. And that's not good, right? And Hanif
right.
would have been critical there.
Yeah, suddenly you're really thin at guard.
Right, which we thought was the biggest strength we had going into the season, right? And now
yeah,
we're...
So you got to, knock on wood, hope for no injuries the rest of the season at guard, because I know there was some kind of discussion about if it would make any sense to take the red shirt off of Eke for this year. But, you know, the thing is, I don't know if you replace a guard with a guy who's kind of down on the depth chart at power forward.
Well, we're going to put a guy who needs to redshirt to gain strength and experience, and we're going to put him in the interior defense that's already struggling?
Yeah, the thing is, that's the tough thing. I'm not sure Eke helps that much unless you really need bodies. And the thing is, while they may need a body or two, they needed a guard. And so, like, I don't know if, like, moving other guys down a spot to – and the thing is, even if Eke played, he'd probably be, like, 4 minutes a game at most, right? You know, so there's probably not much value in taking the red shirt off of Eke. But, you know, as I've said before, I'm not sure how much he's going to play next year with some of the guys who are coming in, with Morrow being activated and Joey Hauser coming into the program and no other bigs are scheduled to leave the program.
And Brendan Bailey coming in.
Yeah, and I don't know how much we're going to get from Bailey in his first year back, but he's maybe a little bit more of a perimeter player, but he is big. I think I want to say he's about 6'7", but I think he's more of a shooter. But still, the point remains, I don't know where – but I guess my point is you could play Eke this year if you need a body, but I'm just not sure he really fits a need, so it probably makes sense for him to continue to redshirt. Although he does dress every game. So I guess there is the possibility that if, say, they did lose a player to a bad injury in a game, especially if it was a front court player, maybe there's the opportunity to say, well, get in there. But I would not anticipate Eke is going to play this year, even with the loss of Cheatham. Now, if somebody else leaves the program, particularly in the front court, then maybe that becomes something you consider. But I
or
think
a significant injury or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. If there's a big injury in the front court, then I think you would probably consider that. So. But, you know, there was, you know, Anonymous Eagle posted an article today about what they do with that last scholarship. I'm not going to get too deep into it, Phil, but I will say, you know, they do have an option. They can add a player for next year. There's not a whole lot out there recruiting-wise. It's not like going to be a huge impact player as far as, you know, like a guy like Grimes would have been. But Courtney Ramey is the one guy people throw around because Marquette did contact him after he decommitted from Louisville. Sounds like they have a lot of ground to make up with him. Sounds like he's almost close to committing to Missouri, but he can't sign with them yet, so I guess you can try. But I guess that last scholarship is something they could just kind of keep in their pocket. If they want to use it, they can, but I don't think they necessarily have to because they are looking at some pretty good players for 2019. And as things stand now, Matt Helt would only be the only player leaving the program next year. So maybe you do stash that scholarship and use it for 2019. So do you have any thoughts about what they may use with this suddenly available scholarship?
Well, I think there's two approaches. One, I think the stash it makes sense because at some point you have to rebalance the classes. Like, we can't continuously only have one player leaving the program or two players leaving the program, right? Because that means at some point you're going to have five or six players leaving at once, which is just not tenable. So you got to either rebalance the class or you sit on it in the spring window and hope a experienced point guard as a grad transfer wants to come in and run with these guys, right? I don't think we need a scoring point guard. We're not going to need like an Andrew Rousey, right? To play point. We need somebody that can facilitate and feed everyone else. So if a grad transfer, a unicorn, so to speak, shows up in the spring, you got a scholarship there waiting for it. It's what we always talk about. Things resolve themselves. You know, it would have been Grimes' scholarship had he committed here. So I think it's either grad transfer or we rebalance the classes. I can't see you doing much else with it.
Yeah, like I said, unless something shocking happens, like, you know, suddenly there's a five-star guy who decommits and wants to come here, not happening. Like I said, I think you have no idea who the grad transfers could be. Like I said, I think obviously a facilitator who can defend at point guard would be great. But other than that, I don't think you've used a scholarship just to use it. Might just stash it for another year. But it's just kind of wait and see on that. We'll see if Marquette is connected to anybody over the next few weeks or months, I guess, as we head into the spring. But, you know, Phil, I didn't want to wrap this podcast without talking about some of the good things that happened in Maui, because that was a pretty good trip for Marquette. They went to Maui. They did the most important thing, which was beat VCU to get on the winner side of the bracket, come out of there 2-1, two wins against decent teams. VCU, maybe, who knows, maybe a bubble-type team, and LSU, I don't know what they're going to be in the SEC this year. They may be okay, but I don't know if they're a tournament team. And, you know, then you lose to Wichita State, and there's no shame in that. But to come out of there 2-1 with a boost to the strength of schedule, I really can't view the Maui trip as anything other than a success.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that we got out of it what we needed, right? We ended up on the, from an, I guess, RPI or Ken Pom ranking standpoint, we ended up on the right side, of the correct side of the bracket. We showed flashes of potential in that Wichita State game. You know, one of the things where I got, you know, and I blame myself for all the defensive problems in Eastern Illinois, because I was tweeting about, well, the defense is better in the after the end of the first half of the Wichita State game, right, where you saw Kane and Elliott playing, and actually the offense kind of went cold. But the defense seemed to kind of ratchet up a little bit, and there was potential there where we kind of held Wichita State in check, even though we weren't scoring, and kept it to a 5-point margin. Now the wheels totally came off in the back 10 minutes of the second half, but I think that was Maui represented a vision of the potential of this team. I think this is I would argue that the team is an above average team pre Hanif leaving, but it's an above average team that can beat some good teams on any given day. So I think it was, like you said, it was a successful trip. I enjoyed it immensely, actually. I wish they didn't have 12:30 starts, two different days during that week, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I took a 2.5-hour lunch break on Monday, so that was great. That was delightful. But you know, we talked earlier about how when the shooting's off, they could lose to anybody. But when the shooting is on, they could beat just about anybody. That's the upside when you have as many shooters as Marquette had. You know, they were able to hang with Wichita State because of their shooting. And they were able to pull out wins against VCU and LSU, you know, in part because they shot the ball so well. And despite some of the easy buckets those teams were getting, Tremont Waters was killing us. I'm glad we don't have to see him twice a year at Georgetown now.
Holy crow.
Because, you know, he was a verbal to Georgetown before they fired JT3. But I'm glad we don't have to see him all the time. But, yeah, boy, he lit Marquette up. But thankfully, Marquette's shooting was enough to overcome that. And so they at least put themselves in a position, depending on how the rest of the season goes, to at least be in the have a schedule that is worthy of a tournament bid. Now, obviously, they got to win enough games between now and then to even be in that discussion. But I think when the committee evaluates Marquette, who knows how many games they're going to win between now and then, but if the committee is evaluating Marquette, one thing they won't say is, well, you didn't play anybody. Because they definitely did. So their strength of schedule is going to be quality. Their non-con strength of schedule is going to be pretty solid. And so that's the most important thing to take out of Maui. And thank goodness they didn't lose, because, oh my gosh, how bad is Cal? Cal went 0-3, went and lost to Chaminade. And thankfully, you don't
play Chaminade. Blown out by Chaminade.
Yeah. And Chaminade's a waste of a game if you beat them, and then it's a total catastrophe if you lose to them. So thankfully, Marquette didn't have to play them. The thing is, they almost did, because Cal inexplicably hung with Wichita State all game. And Wichita State pulled away late in the second half and beat them by like 10, I think. But then, you know, Wichita State goes the complete other way and then loses two games and loses to Chaminade, which is the worst thing that can happen if you go to Maui.
Right. Well, the one caveat we need to put on the Wichita State game is, yeah, I mean, we weren't bad and we hung with them for a while, but Wichita State was also playing without their best player.
Yeah, so that wasn't even the best version of Wichita State. So they're going to be a Final Four team, or Final Four quality, I should say. They're not. I wouldn't say they're definitely going, but when the tournament begins, there will be a lot of people who have Wichita State in their Final Four. Guarantee you that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what's interesting is, Like if you look at the KenPom rankings of the teams we've played, right? We haven't, other than Mount St. Mary, which is a 300 rank, is ranked 300th. We've got very high quality on the schedule that we've played, and two losses out of that group. We lost to the fifth ranked KenPom team and the 13th ranked KenPom team. That's not shabby. That's not bad. And even Eastern Illinois is ranked as 205. So to lose it would have been near disaster, but still, it's not like those things are unheard of.
And if Eastern Illinois wants to play like that the rest of the year, that'd be just fine with us, and maybe they'll be a top 200 win, which would, who knows, maybe they sneak up even a little higher than that. That'd be just fine with us. Like I said, I wouldn't say Marquette's schedule is like a world beater. It's going to wow anybody, but it's fine. It's fine, especially if they could go out next week and win two out of three games in what would be one of the most crucial stretches of the season, against Georgia, Vermont, and Wisconsin. As we kind of, look ahead a little bit, Phil. I'm going to knock on wood that I'm not going to jinx them on Wednesday night, and things go well against Chicago State. I mean, that's a game where there's really just no excuse.
Quite frankly, shut the program down if we lose that game.
Yeah, I mean
that not, seriously.
According to KenPom, Marquette has a 99% chance of winning that game. Chicago State is 340 in KenPom. This is a game
there
I think
should be a 0.9 at the end of that.
Yeah, they. Mike Broeker, the deputy AD at Marquette, when people were complaining about this game when it came out on the schedule over the summer, said this is a kind of a make good from a couple years ago. I guess then they had to take it off the schedule, so they still owed Chicago State a game, and so they had to make good and they had to put them on the schedule this year. Otherwise, I don't think this game would be on the schedule. There would probably be somebody less bad.
Well, I don't know if we would even had that game, quite frankly. I mean, because if you look at the way the Georgia, Vermont, and Wisconsin games are jammed together, I don't know that we would have played the game at all. I think we would have spaced it out a little more.
Yeah, maybe so. But again, I'm afraid of jinxing myself or jinxing the team. Wednesday night should absolutely be a win. So most of you will probably listen to this podcast on Wednesday. Absolutely should win. Really would be a catastrophe if anything else happened that night. I mean, KenPom has Marquette as a 26-point favorite. I think I saw in Vegas it's about that as well, about 27, 28. So no excuses, blow out Chicago State. Then moving on to Georgia, things get a little interesting, Phil, because Georgia going to be a team that's probably going to be in the mix for the tournament in a very tough SEC. They got that. I mean, they have some pretty. I mean, they're off to a 5-1 start. We are their next game, so they actually have this week off. So they have a full week to prepare for Marquette, and I'm sure they're looking, hey, let's get the ball into Yonte Maton, because according to the metrics, he should have an easy time in there, and he probably will. So Maton is the huge, huge concern with Georgia, because Matt Helt and Theo John, get your fouls ready, because he's going to. The thing is, you don't want to put him on the line either, because he's a 97% free throw shooter. So fouling him isn't going to be a great strategy. So, look, Maton is going to get his. I mean, he's probably going to have at least 25 points in this game, if not more. I think you just got to hope that you can limit everyone else on this Georgia team if you're going to win on Saturday.
Yeah, it's really a question of, do you help on Maton? Like, do you help off and try and limit him and risk other players getting hot, maybe they get hot from the perimeter, or do you just die by, risk the potential of dying by 1,000 paper cuts?
Well, I think you do have to double them because, again, early in the season, but Georgia is shooting 31.9% from downtown. That ranks 243rd in the country. So not an elite three-point shooting team, at least from what they've shown so far. So maybe you can afford to double and leave a little space for some of those shooters and hope that they don't suddenly catch fire on you. Because, I mean, you have to – you can't leave Matt Helt or Theo John alone with that guy down there. Because he's just going to go to work. And like I said, if he's working one-on-one all night, I'm afraid he could get into the 30s.
Well, and we saw what happens when you do that in the Purdue game, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Haas just went to work and did literally anything he wanted. And I think – He's got a good O rating of 116. I mean, he takes a bunch of shots. He's a good free throw shooter. So, like, just hacking him to death is really not going to do you any favors. So there's plenty of reason to be concerned with Georgia. Now, again, for what it's worth, KenPom does have Marquette as a slight favorite in the game, a 6-point favorite. I think that's probably because of Marquette's guard play and their overall offense. But Georgia is an excellent defensive team. 39th in their defensive efficiency is 39th in the country. Their 3-point defense is 23rd in the country. Their 2-point defense is 44th. So they're top 50 everywhere defensively. And so that's so Marquette's offense is going to be really put up to the test against this Georgia team.
Yeah, it's what's very interesting is it's basically strength on strength and weakness on weakness. Because you know their defense is very good. And they're long, right? Which Marquette struggles with. I think that's going to be interesting to see with especially Rousey and Howard. Can they get their shots off with the length potential even around the perimeter where Georgia is strong there. But it's also weakness on weakness, right? Georgia's offense, Matten aside, is not great. And Marquette's defense is no, yeah, you know, so their offense is probably better than our defense, but is their defense better than our offense? And which, you know, which versions of those things show up? So I actually think this could be a bit of a slugfest. I think, I don't think this is going to be a shootout. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think they'll hold our offense in check. And perhaps we'll do some things. You're going to have to. You're going to have to do some things to limit Matten. And as a result, maybe Georgia's offense isn't even as good as the season averages. I don't know. Maybe that's just being optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Because Marquette's defense can make a bad offense look pretty good sometimes.
Is this an effort outscore them game?
Yeah. I mean, well, you're going to try. But I mean, Georgia's defense is not going to let you. And we've seen what happens when Marquette goes up against really good defenses, against Wichita State, against South Carolina in the tournament last year. A good defense is more predictable than a good offense because you're going to have nights when the shots just aren't falling and your good offense just isn't there, like Marquette had against Eastern Illinois. A good defense is a little bit more repeatable. If you have a good defense, if you have a good scheme, if you have good defensive players, if you have length, you can go into a game with a little more confidence that is going to be there every single night. So I think Georgia is probably coming into this game very confident that their defense is going to limit Marquette's 3-point shooting. And then they can just have Matten go to work, and he should be enough to beat Marquette. That's probably Georgia's approach in this game. From Marquette's approach, I don't know what their approach is going to be other than hopefully maybe you double the big man.
Maybe go 2-3. I mean, if they're not much of a shooting team, do you go 2-3 but you're risking giving up a lot of rebounds?
I may be willing to risk that. I to see if you can just limit their touches in the paint and do something in the middle there, because it has just been way too easy for teams that don't have a post player like Georgia does. So I would, if I had a great strategy, I would say let's do this, but I don't. I'm not a coach. I'm just a little podcaster who just spits ideas at the wall and hopes something sticks. So, be prepared for a fight on Saturday, I'm saying. And hopefully we get a good crowd at the Bradley Center, because Marquette's going to need it. Because Georgia is absolutely a team that could give Marquette a lot of fits and could really and could certainly beat Marquette with their defense.
Well, and that brings up a topic that, like I mentioned earlier, that there were all of 2,000 people for the Eastern Illinois game. One of the things, like, the crowd generally, the students specifically, and the lower bowl, we've got to find a way. I get that winning will heal things and people get excited about winning teams and stuff like that. But at some point, you gotta self-motivate and get excited for these games and get out, like, because some of these crowds have been pretty dead, you know, going back to last season and you know the one or two we've had this season. The fan base has to find a way. That Georgia game, that they're the emotion of the home game and having the home crowd. could absolutely swing that game. I mean, Eastern Illinois, there was just no energy in the building, and I think the team reflected that as well. So, you know, some of this has got to be on the fan base to get excited.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the team needs the support. And look, if you're going to go to a Marquette game between now and Christmas, go to this one. Because there's really nothing else. I mean, Vermont's a nice team. Vermont might be a tournament team, and I think that'll be a tough game on Tuesday as well. We'll break that one down in the next podcast. But you know, other than that, between now and Christmas, you got Chicago State, Northern Illinois, and American. Those are your home games between now and Christmas. So, I wouldn't expect huge crowds at those games, just because, like, you know, you're probably not gonna. The casual fan is not probably going to get fired up for those games. You know, Marquette, as I've said, Marquette has great fans. The ones who are at every game are great, and they have a very loyal fan base. But to fill the place up and get 15,000 plus, get up, you know, to fill the place, get up to the corners, get 18,000, you need those casual fans who are kind of like, maybe I'll go, maybe I won't. You need to get them excited. And hopefully a team like Georgia can get a few more people excited, and certainly, I hope there's going to be more, you know, upwards of 10,000 there on Saturday.
I would challenge that there needs to be at least 12,000 in those seats for that. For a Saturday, a 1 o'clock game, and as much as it pains me to say this, Wisconsin's not playing in the Big Ten Championship until that night, so any of those silly fans that do that, like, unholy alliance can go to the Marquette game and then go watch their stupid championship game later. Sorry.
Guys, there are plenty of bars in Milwaukee. So, you know, you could go to the game early in the afternoon, then just go with your Badger friends and watch the football game somewhere at a nice bar downtown, somewhere, Water Street, wherever. Just find someplace there in Milwaukee and you know, watch your games there. You may even have time to get home if you want to. There's plenty of time to get to watch your football game if that's what you want to do. But hopefully you're listening to this because you're a huge Marquette basketball fan. The thing is, people listen to this podcast, they're either live somewhere else in the country, or they're probably going to all the games anyway.
Right.
So it's not like we're really preaching to you guys, because, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you like Marquette basketball enough that you care to go to the games. We need you to tell your friends to go to the games.
Correct.
We need you to, you students, knock on the doors of your neighbors. Say, hey, you going to the game on Saturday? Why not? Let's go to the game. Let's get on the shuttle. Let's go to the game. So fire up your neighbor, like, again, especially all you students. Knock on your doors, your friends. Tell them, guys, let's get to this game on Saturday. The team really needs them on Saturday. And, for the rest of you, hey, you know, tweet about it. Get on social media. Say you're going to the game. Get people out there. Because, again, it's the casual fans that really need to be brought in and get a little more fired up about this team. Because, you know, I know being a borderline tournament team may not excite the casual fan. But, you know, I'm telling you, the team's getting a little closer. And, you know, I know they still got a ways to go. I wouldn't expect a whole lot in March this year necessarily. But they are building, and getting fans out there is part of the building process. So, I am certainly hopeful that there can be a nice crowd there on Saturday, because, like I said, Phil, if the energy in the building is similar to what it was Monday, it could be a sad Saturday for the Marquette fans who are in attendance, because the team may not have the energy to get past a team like Georgia. So hopefully it's a nice, loud crowd full of blue and gold, because I promise you Georgia's going to bring it, because they're going to want a little payback for Marquette going to Athens and beating them last year.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for this podcast. Again, we'll look ahead to that tough stretch probably in the next one, Phil, because we'll be kind of in the middle of it, because as we've said all year, is that Georgia-Vermont-Wisconsin stretch is really the second most critical part of the non-conference season, the first being Maui and getting that win at VCU and boosting the strength of schedule. But as far as getting a few more quality wins, I mean, look at Vermont. You know, their KenPom rating is actually better than Georgia's right now.
Right. And they would be – they challenged Kentucky early, right? I mean,
yeah, they took Kentucky to the wire. Is Kentucky is very talented but very young, but you know, Vermont is going to be a team that will have a great shot to win his conference. And then, of course, we'll talk about the hated Badgers on next week's podcast as well. But you know, going through that stretch, you know, getting through that two and one is critical to me, and we'll talk about that more next week. But you know, to get all three, then I think you put yourself in great shape, non-conference schedule wise, as you look ahead to tournament resumes.
So what are you predicting, Joe, for the Georgia game?
You know what? I know it's easy to be down in the dumps after what we saw against Eastern Illinois, but I'm going to give the team a little bit of credit and say, look, you know, they had maybe their reasons why they didn't play well. They're going to have a game against Chicago State, which they should win comfortably, where they could maybe adjust on some rotation, you know, some of their new rotations and you know, the younger guys playing a little bit more. I think they're going to have it together by Saturday. I really do. And you know, I haven't strayed from my preseason game by game yet. I'm not going to do it right now. So I'll say after hopefully a win against Chicago State, I'll say Marquette is going to beat Georgia. I think they're going to get enough outside shots. It's going to be a threes for two situations because, again, Georgia's going to go inside. They're going to get what they need to. I'm just going to hope Marquette gets just enough stops to win. I don't want to copy the KenPom prediction, but it looks pretty good to me, 77-71. I'll say maybe a little closer than that. I'll say 78-75 Marquette on Saturday.
Oh, man, you're just carrying the cardiac arrest over from the
it's
Eastern
never,
Illinois game.
It's never going to be easy. I promise you with this. It will never be easy. How about you? What do you think for Saturday?
I know I said earlier it might be a rock fight and a lower scoring game, but I think it's going to be different. I mean, all the games have Marquette and its opponent have scored in the 80s. So I actually think this is going to be 84-80 Marquette. I do think the threes will be raining.
So Maiden has what, 40?
Yeah, I think Theo John will have a good game. But yeah, I think there's going to be some real struggles on the Marquette defensive end. Maiden's just going to eat. But I think we see either Rousey or Howard probably. I think one of them scores 28 or more in the game, and then Hauser pours in at least another 25. Yeah, you're going
to
have to, but yeah, I think Greg Elliott, my eyes between Maui and that Eastern Illinois game, my eyes are kind of open to what his potential is. I think he'll continue to turn it up.
I certainly hope so, too. Hey, I'll get you out of here with this, Phil. You mentioned rock fights. Did you see our friends in Madison against Virginia?
I was going to bring this up so we could laugh heartily about it.
Yeah, I don't want to laugh too much because then we may go out and have a 35-point game against Georgia. But the funniest thing about that game, not so much that Wisconsin did not win, but that I saw somebody tweet that there was a promotion with Raising Cane's chicken fingers. Do you guys have that in Wisconsin?
No, we do not. Nope.
Okay, it's popular in Texas and it's delicious. But the whole crowd was going to get free Raising Cane's if Virginia hit 60. and they got 49.
Wow.
That was whoever negotiated that deal for Raising Cane's, good for you. I think I may go get some Cane's myself this weekend just because I found that so funny.
Well, those two teams, quite frankly, not only did they set basketball 100 years, I think they may have wound the entire history of humankind back 100 years. It was atrocious.
I didn't watch it just because I couldn't. I mean, it's just snooze fest for me, but yeah, that was rough seeing that final score. And that's just a taste of some of the hate we'll be bringing you next week.
Right, yeah. Well, I did catch the last minute of it because I turned into hate watch because that's what I do. I enjoyed where Wisconsin was done 12 with their high-powered offense that had scored 37 points to that point, where they – Greg Gard, who was the subject of much Twitter ridicule last night that you may want to go back and find. But anyway
– Oh, I found some of it.
But anyway, he called a timeout with like 30 seconds left. I assumed he was going to come up with some whiz-bang way that Wisconsin was going to score at least 6 points in the time remaining. Called timeout to play no defense and let Virginia run out the clock. It is the ultimate in Wisconsin basketball. We are just going to kill you with boredom.
Yeah, I mean, just should have just called some kind of defense, like just automatically gone into his zone, you know, some kind of like auto zone when they could go into a – when they get on – the defensive end of the floor. We'll talk about that next week. As always, we appreciate you listening here on Scrambled Eggs. We always appreciate your feedback. On Twitter, you can hit me up at Joe McCann 3. You can hit Phil up at M-O-O-O-F 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. You can also please rate us and review us on iTunes. We always appreciate your kind words on there. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well where we post the podcast. Hey, Phil, fire up some of your neighbors and get them out to the Georgia game.
I'm going to go start putting petitions and ballots throughout the neighborhood to get them out.
All right, sounds good. We will see you next week, hopefully after a couple Marquette wins this weekend. Until then, seashells and balloons, everyone.